awkward setup here today, but welcome everyone. For the college council members, you have a revised copy of the council roster. You can review that. If there are any additions or corrections, let Michaela know, please. Sure do that. New business today. John Kaplan was going to make a presentation and chief of the University of Police. However, he was not able to make it, so the assistant, Al Malkin, will be doing the presentation. Al, for some of you that do not know Al, is retired police chief here in Canton. We also have a retired police chief from Messina with us today, Tim Currier, who is recently elected mayor. Congratulations. So we have a retired police chief day-to-day, so to speak. Okay, I thought the presentation from Al would give the college council members a chance to maybe ask some questions about recent developments that occurred both on and off the campus, and maybe that can be addressed after Al's presentation. Al, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here this afternoon. Chief Kaplan won't be able to make it today because they're having a peaceful protest in Potsdam, which is going to start at the university and end up downtown near the bridges. They're not going to block the bridges, but they wanted a police escort anyways, so we don't foresee any problems there. We're going to have a peaceful protest here on our campus this afternoon. We don't foresee any problems there either. So, the after-action review for the Yik Yak attack, so to speak. This all started back on October 23rd. I believe I got a phone call. I was in Albany for actually a threat assessment training, along with Dean Bish and Kristen Roberts. So Lieutenant Perry contacted me somewhere between 12:30 and 1:30 in the morning, advised me of what was going on, and I obviously advised somebody better call Chief Kaplan right away. And then that set the chain of events rolling. So, I really don't want to read to you, but it's the first time I've seen this PowerPoint. You can see the message that came in initially, and this is what we're rolling with. As soon as this came in, Lieutenant Perry and Officer Seth Biliotro started working on this case immediately, making notifications, contacting Yik Yak. Did a great job of contacting Yik Yak and getting the initial contacts in place. Later on, obviously, we used more resources to find out exactly what was going on. As you can see there, Dean Bish was contacted, and then the other contacts were starting to be made. Now, in the cases with threats like this and other crises on campus, we have something we refer to as Emergency Response Resource Plan. And I've got some slides of this. And this basically will give us a grid that tells us, based on the threat level, who should be contacted and whether the Emergency Response Resource Group should also be called in together. And we can talk about that a little bit more after we go through the event. So at this time, Dean Bish and Kristen Roberts decided that they would head back to campus or shortly thereafter. And we didn't believe at that time that this threat really met enough criteria to close the campus down at that time or do a lockdown. Then I believe all the other, Dr. Sabran was contacted and the conference calls started. So then we just had the conversations, obviously, with the president, the dean, the chief, and other people on campus via conference calls. Then at 1:47, Sean Miller was notified via email, myself and Calvin Smith were also kept in touch. Basically, I never left Albany. I was told to stay there. And so basically, I was just getting all this information via email and also text. So we're being updated every step of the way. Commissioner Bruce McBride was notified. Special Agent Tim Lazzito from Homeland Security Investigations played a real critical role in tracking down who sent this message. So we had a lot of good resources, and things, you know, moved along relatively well. Okay, then one thing we had also. So this message was posted, and on Yik Yak, if you get more than 5 not likes or thumbs down, the message will disappear. Apparently, that's what happened at this point. And Courtney, you can go ahead and jump in if I'm straying off course. Going fine? Okay. So obviously, we had people on campus who didn't like it. Okay, 8 a.m., the President's Cabinet was meeting. Obviously, I wasn't there, but Lieutenant Perry was, and from the sounds of it, he did a fine job. Okay, then apparently the campus was notified that it wasn't credible, classes would go on.
Just to interrupt, we actually sent the first email out to the campus, the students and the faculty and staff. I sent it, I think it was 3:30, 3:45, that first email actually went out, letting the students, faculty and staff know what was going on, and that at this point we were still moving forward with, you know, having the campus open attending classes. So they did know early on. I don't think it's been a John's timeline, but I sent that email out.
Could you tell us why the first call was not? Do you include that part in your presentation, why the first call was not credible?
Basically because it didn't really give any specifics. It didn't say someone was going to get shot. It didn't say there was going to be a bomb. It didn't say a car was going to drive down through campus. It was just a general threat with no specifics, no specific time or method in which to do it.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Would that be the same now? I mean, has that changed anything?
Well, I think we're trying to refine our criteria now, and there are some different threat assessment tools out there, kind of like the old FBI bomb threat assessment tools. So we're trying to find some better tools to use. Not that we doubt our training and experience at all, but people like to see some kind of matrix of how you came to make a decision. So that's what we're trying to work towards.
Yeah. What's interesting is that there have been several other kind of similar threats via Yik Yak on other college campuses than has happened on our college campus. And either they took no action at all, some didn't even notify the student body, the faculty and staff that a threat appeared. None of them ended up in a lockdown situation. Only the most recent resulted in an evacuation of a building because it was a threat against a specific building. But what we found in looking at incidents that occurred before the one here and after the one here is that none of them have deemed these threats to be credible because they have really lacked specificity.
Yeah, and that goes for within days of this event happening, we took calls from Virginia Tech. There were one of the universities said, heck no, we're not locking down our notification on ours at all. Then we had UMass Lowe and a few other ones that were contacting us. And eventually we put a packet together to distribute statewide to all university police of how we handle our event and also giving people the contact information and everything for Yik Yak and other social media outlets so everyone can access it quicker.
Is how the situation addressed, does that have an effect on the final charge? My question is about that is I wondered, University of Albany had a threat like a month later, and I can't remember what exactly it was, but that student ended up simply being issued an appearance ticket.
Well,
and I couldn't understand the difference.
We had the Department of Homeland Security in immediately. Okay, and they've got some really great resources, very, very sharp investigators. And based on what happened on this campus, the distress it caused on this campus and other campuses, we had St. Lawrence University that was also notifying their students. We we had Camp Central School. So the whole state was really looking at what was happening in our campus. And basically the feds took over the case, and they felt it rise to the, they wanted to make a statement to everyone using social media that this type of behavior won't be tolerated.
It's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, the interest in the incident continues from other campuses. Up until today, for example, when we were contacted by Corning Community College, who had their own Yik Yak threat, okay, and wanted to know how we handled it and what our decision points were and so forth. So this isn't exactly where we wanted to become a best practice, but apparently we've become one. Okay, and then the other thing that's a little bit interesting, okay, and I guess, you know, SUNY Canton, the source of all big stuff, the Supreme Court is actually dealing with this, right? Because they were asking, in fact, your question, Len, right? Different circuits have dealt with this kind of threat in different ways. And the particular case that's in front of the Supreme Court, and take this with, take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt. This is me paraphrasing, and I'm not sure what I'm saying is 100% correct, but this will give you the gist of it, right? There was a woman who was estranged or divorced from her husband, okay? And the husband made on his Facebook page all kinds of threats against her specifically, okay? Saying he was going to kill her, he was going to do this, he was going to do that. Police and FBI went to his house, okay? He basically blew them off and then threatened them on the Facebook page. And what the his defense team is saying is that this is freedom of speech and that he's doing this as a catharsis from being so upset about the divorce and so on, okay? And so it's in front of the Supreme Court right now. And those of you who read the New York Times may have seen an editorial from the New York Times this past weekend actually saying that in cases like this, their argument is that it's freedom of speech, and thus the people shouldn't be badly punished for saying these things. Their readers begged to differ, looking at their responses, likening this to yelling fire in the middle of a crowded theater. Okay, and thus falling under the exclusion from freedom of speech that that falls under. So this has become kind of a big thing, okay, both in terms of other campuses having the same kind of threat and responding in the same way as we did or wanting to know more about what we did and so forth, and also now becoming a civil rights issue that's before the Supreme Court. So it's an interesting world. And it kind of started here.
Now, Alan, your comments, when was Homeland Security involved? What time were they involved? You said they were notified immediately. When
they were involved sometime in the early morning hours, I think by 2:30 in the morning or something.
Oh, right away, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're within hours they were contacted. Because we knew they had the resources that maybe we could catch this person quicker. Okay. Sooner rather than later. As it was, to skip around, we caught this person about 48 hours later. This happened on Wednesday night. I mean, Thursday morning. So by Friday evening, or by probably the middle of Friday, we knew who he was and had set up a plan to catch him. Okay, by 11:30, Chief Kaplan was attending the President's Cabinet meeting. And that's where you had your discussions, apparently with some disagreement about what steps were taken so far. The threat analysis was discussed. And at 11:45 a.m., a second post was discovered saying it's happening at noon. PC clearly moves towards shelter in place.
President's Cabinet.
Oh, President's Cabinet.
President's Cabinet, thank you. As I charged through this earlier, like PC, probable cause. Okay, President's Cabinet, we got that clarified.
I didn't write this.
So by 5:59 a.m., the alert was sent to shelter in place, and that's when we contacted additional resources. Prior to this, though, even before this happened, I was on the phone early in the morning with Chief McDougall, and I asked her if she could have an extra patrol car on campus just throughout the morning, just kind of orbiting around, nothing really special, but just show a little bit more police presence, because obviously the students didn't know about this threat, so we just wanted to show that we were taking this serious. Okay, then we had the command post set up at UP, and also Sergeant Padawano, who was actually basically running the show from over near Nevildine, I believe, somewhere right out of his patrol car. So we had University Police set up as command post initially, and then while that was still set up, but really a lot of the action was going on outside from the state police sergeant. And somewhere along the way throughout this event, and that might have been on the last slide, we had a student who showed up, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, at Cheney Dining Hall?
Yes, at Cheney.
Who had a black vest on, a tactical vest. So we had to investigate this, and this really tapped our resources out for quite a while, I believe up to 3 hours or better. That was two or more people handling this incident, just trying to make sure this person, A, wasn't part of the threat. Eventually it was determined that there was some bad decision making, some bad choices made, and that was resolved. So then just continuing on with a series of conversations and events, 1:22 p.m., we started getting some, what was this on? Was this on Yik Yak?
All of this on Yik Yak, the whole entire day as we're sitting in lockdown, we were monitoring social media, and so we kept reading. Liz was our social media queen for the day, but we kept monitoring. So everything that popped up that was a little bit, questionable, anyone said the speaker loud stuff, we investigated all of that. Every time we saw something that popped up, we, did some more legwork with UP and the Res Life staff and others to investigate what was going on.
Right, so it's constant trying to investigate yaks and trying to basically rumor control was taking place. 2:25 p.m., Special Agent Duran from the FBI, they contacted him, ran by him. Everything they're doing at this point, the FBI was supporting the decisions that were being made also and offering whatever resources they had available. We had Lieutenant Boye from the State Police and Sergeant Padawano. We also had our staff was here. We had obviously Lieutenant Perry, Lieutenant Kirsch. We had Deputy Chief Tim Ashley, also came over from Potsdam. We're also dealing with SUNY Systems, keeping them up to date. Senator Rishi lended her support. And discussions continue about the duration of the lockdown.
I should mention that earlier in the morning at about 10:30, I contacted the SUNY folks. First, their communications office, then their legal office, and finally I called the chancellor's office and was put right through to the chancellor, which was quite a surprise.
Wow.
Right? And so, within 1 second of calling, I was on the phone with Nancy Zimmer, okay? And she was, saying basically stay the course, and she was calling together her folks down in Albany to do reconnoiter around the situation, okay, and to see if they had any advice to offer, and then they dispatched, of course, Commissioner McBride to join us, and he subsequently did, which is the Commissioner McBride arrives at CEOC. And ultimately that evening, the Chancellor sent out, an email expressing solidarity with this campus and with the actions we had taken in alerting the other SUNY presidents that about this kind of threat, and that research is going on in terms of whether as a system we would advocate taking down Yik Yak on our campuses and so forth.
So Commissioner McBride arrived. We had contact with Pat Gagnon. I was also in contact with Pat Gagnon throughout the day via text. We work very close with St. Lawrence University. We always support each other whenever there's any kind of crisis or any other event that we need to support each other on. They're good enough to send over 200 dinners, and Greg Kai was obviously handling the media
And ultimately, we finished the search of the residence halls. I guess I can just fill in some pieces that weren't there. Initially, is that the next one? Yeah, so initially we decided to clear the academic buildings. And so each of those was searched. The campus police and state troopers would bring by vehicles. We would take the people out to their cars, right, if they were off campus, and escort them off campus. Or we would return the students to the residence hall rooms if they were on campus. Okay, so this was done building by building, right? And we had sent out notifications that we were going to be doing it, though not which building, because if there was something going on, we didn't want to alert anybody as to, you know, where to look next. And so so the academic buildings were all evacuated and nothing untoward was found. And then we went room by room through the residence halls. Okay, and this process ended at about 6:30. And so at 6:45, the searches were complete and we lifted the lockdown. And that's when the assistance from St. Lawrence University was so helpful, because the emails and postings and so forth shifted from, you know, I'm worried to I'm hungry, okay, from our students. And so we wanted to feed all of our students simultaneously, right, so that, you know, it wouldn't be that some had to wait while others were eating. And so between our own food service and Cheney and St. Lawrence's folks, we were able to deliver food to every residence hall simultaneously. And so all the students got fed at once, and they were very, very thankful.
Yeah, so since then, obviously, we've done a series of forums led by the president, and we've also done our own after-action review. The university police met with the New York State Police, the sheriffs, and the village police, and we discussed how the event went, what went well, what didn't go so well, how we can improve in the future. And, you know, the state police played a pretty significant role in this. They did a very good job. Sergeant Paduano was really getting things going. Chief Kaplan really didn't have a full understanding of what was going on, obviously, because he's up in the tower. And so when he was communicating to people at times, he thought that everyone was in contact with each other when that wasn't really the case. He wasn't really aware of who Lieutenant Boyer was, or that actually how much work Sergeant Paduano was doing out in the field. But it all worked out. We've done our after-action review in our own department internally and discussed what went well, what didn't go so well, and how to improve in the future. And as you know, Friday following this event, the person that made the threat was charged, was arrested by the Homeland Security. Subsequently charged. Last I knew, he was still in the Clinton County Correctional Facilities. Had one or two hearings, and they're not going to let him. They're not going to let him post bond, even if he did want to post bond. It'd be in the range of $150,000, and he doesn't have the resources available to do that. So, based on my discussions with Homeland Security, there'll probably be other hearings, and perhaps within 2 to 3 months. There'll probably be a decision made. You'll probably be given some kind of a plea bargain. But that could go. Initially, they're going to charge him with up to 20 years for this crime. Instead, they back down to up to 5 years. But it could be 5 years and a $250,000 fine. So it's a huge mistake for this young man. Chances are it'll probably end up being between time served, maybe 2 to 3 years with time served. Maybe less. And that's where we stand there. Since then, we've been wrapping up the investigation, following up on the second phone call. And
second posting.
Pardon me?
Second UCAC posting.
Yes, the second UCAC posting, which, based on our investigation today, doesn't look like it's likely that it had anything to do with the previous post. It's just someone telling someone what time something was going down, okay, for an event on campus.
Al, do you or the president feel it might have been an important thing to contact this council with regard to all of this? Because I read it in the paper, And but even through the media, maybe they were notified before we were. And it's a matter of concern to me because I love this college and I contribute to this college. And I just felt that maybe I should, maybe wrongly, because I know you notified campus people the way you should have. Okay. My whole thing was, should we have been given the courtesy of a, I'm not sure if Ron was even notified.
Maybe I could address that. Dr. Chiffon and I had a discussion about that afterwards, and it was, I don't know how to put that. He was about to notify me as chair, and had I been notified, I would have relayed that on to the college council members. You were locked out of your office? Or
right,
the doctor could explain it better.
Here's what the timing was, Jim. As I mentioned, I was on the phone with the chancellor, okay, and this was at about 11:30. Okay, we were having the executive cabinet meeting at 11:30, right, which we thought was going to be, everything was quiet, okay, threat is obviously not real, okay, and, you know, thank goodness for that.
Right.
And I was set to call Ron at 12 o'clock, okay? At 11:45, right, that second posting saying it's going to happen at 12 went up, okay, which we took to be connected to the first one. Now, subsequent investigation says maybe it wasn't. Okay, but since we took it to be connected, and since the threat was now imminent, we're saying it's going to happen at 12, right, we decided lockdown, okay, in the interests of safety for our community, and thus I didn't have the opportunity to do anything until the lockdown was over, okay, which was at 10 o'clock that night, okay, and instead I called Ron the next day.
Ron. I share Joe's concerns. According to the timeline that we've seen, there was a campus-wide email at 3:30 and a second one at 9 o'clock. Personally, I had two phone calls between 7 and 7:30 from people saying, what is going on at SUNY Camp? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I had a third phone call at 9:10, and my response was, well, if it was important, I think they would have told the council. I felt like an idiot at noon when I'm reading on News Junkie that there's threats of violence. I know the council is not part of the daily activity here, nor should we be. But we are kind of the eyes and ears of the community, well beyond the campus. And I think we ought to know that. Campus-wide emails were going out early in the morning saying, here is the situation. I think we should have been included in it. And in my own personal experience, I think it's Exhibit A why. I mean, I told three people that morning, something's going on, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I looked like a fool at noon.
I can certainly appreciate what you're saying. You know, it's an extremely difficult position you're put in. But I think every event like this is a learning. We're learning every time we handle events like this. I know for me, coming from the municipal side of things, when I first came here, I got in trouble a few times by my chief for not making proper notifications. Okay, and it was a learning cycle for myself, making sure that Dean Bish is notified on certain events. Just really learning what events rise to the standard of where notifications should be made. So that was a difficult learning curve for me. But I'm sure, future events will change our approach to certain things.
I should also mention, these things, this was a really difficult day, as you can well imagine.
Believe me, I appreciate that.
Right, and one of the stranger things that happened, as I said, I started to call folks down at SUNY, okay, and the first folks that I called were the folks in communication figuring, we need to communicate with communications, okay? And their reaction when I called them, I thought, was rather interesting, okay? It was basically, why are you bothering to call us? Okay, because you didn't raise this to a New York alert, okay, and that you didn't find the threat to be credible, okay? And as such, we're aware of what's going on, and you didn't need to call us, okay? And that was SUNY's response, which I thought, and now bear in mind, I ignored it, okay? And contacted the folks in legal at SUNY, and they were a little bit more concerned, and then I contacted the chancellor, who was very concerned, including very concerned that the folks at SUNY weren't concerned, okay? And so, which is, again, why I wanted to call Ron at that point, okay? And we went into lockdown, so that wasn't really possible, okay? But you're right, okay? And I think we need to make sure that, you know, campus alerts do go to the folks on the college council, okay? I don't see any reason why they shouldn't. Okay, and Ron can certainly vouch that subsequent to that time, right, he's heard from me on a couple of other incidents, right, just because I want folks on the college council to be aware of it before it hits the news, even if it never hits the news. So I think you're right. And so this had us in a very strange situation where, and you know, no, and I fully appreciate this, and I just want the council to understand. The other thing that happened, which I think is probably worth bringing up, okay, is when I was talking to Chief McBride, okay, it came to my attention that we weren't the first campus in SUNY to be hit with a Yik Yak threat. We were the third. Okay, and when I asked Commissioner McBride, as president, shouldn't I have known this?
Yeah.
Right? Shouldn't I have been informed? Okay, about the previous two incidents, shouldn't there have been a, here's what best practices are about this? He said, absolutely, that should have happened. And I think that was part of what prompted then the chancellor's email and a change in SUNY policies. So, like I said before, we never wanted to be the source of this, but we're apparently the source of a number of changes, right, taking place throughout SUNY and throughout the country in terms of how to deal with threats of this nature. So,
yeah, I'm fully confident, Tom, that that issue has been resolved. And again, I laid just because of the timing and also the situation that the campus had not been involved with before. And the other thing I want to mention, there may be people on campus that feel that the College Council sort of interferes at times. But that is one of the sections of state education law that is the responsibility of the college council. It's the safety and conduct of students, and that's clearly in state ed law. So the basis is there for the college council to be notified in any of those situations.
One thing you may want to do also, you can all sign up. Everyone on the college council can sign up for New York Alert. It may not be the way you want to initially get notified, but you may actually get a heads up before we have time to contact the college council by signing up for New York Alert. And I'm not sure, Travis, is that something they actually have to do through the campus?
I mean, traditionally, yes, but if you all want access to it, we can make sure it happens. I can have Brett guy add you all to the list.
Yeah, if you'd like that, we can certainly do that for you.
Explain what that means, Travis. Basically, New York Alert, we sign out to the entire campus, students, faculty, staff, who sign up. Not everyone will get it unless they sign up. Beginning each semester, that could give you an email alert, phone alert, and a text message alert. So, depending where you are, hopefully you get one of those three.
And that would be for, you know, any event of this sort, but also weather and other things like that. Again, somewhat ironically, the day after this happened, I got a Hornet alert, which is the same thing. From Georgia, right, about a potential tornado coming through, right, and you know that came in at 3 a.m, okay, and woke me up. But I don't think the tornado from Georgia was going to hit me here, so I quickly unsubscribed from that number up here. So just bear in mind, once you're on it, you're on it.
Also bear in mind, sometimes it takes a little while to get through the list of names, so we send out a New York alert maybe 20 minutes, depending on your carrier, you know.
Yeah, I understand some people felt there was a delay, but from where I was in Albany, everything seemed to be going really well. I was getting my alerts, so neat. That works well.
But some of the things we've been doing before this event and since this event, we've been doing our active shooter training, trying to reach as many people as we can on the campus, and I think we've reached probably at least 400 faculty and staff and students at least. I know Dave had us into his office, and a lot of the people I've spoken to who had the training said they felt more comfortable throughout this event because of that training, and we continue to do the training as requested or whenever we can set it up. So we're doing the training. Dr. Safran wanted us to do an active shooter drill, actually, before this event even happened. Obviously, we didn't get around to that, but this turned into somewhat of a pretty darn good drill. That doesn't mean we're not going to drill in the future, and we will drill in the future also with active shooter training. We've got our emergency response resource group. Obviously, we have changes from time to time. I've got that up on the screen right now. And basically what this does is outlines who gets called when based on the severity of the event, starting from event 1 and 2, which is the most serious, to 3, 4, and 5, which is the least serious. And the matrix just outlines, I can't even see that from here, but and the matrix just outlines who needs to get called and what type of time frame. And that's just a guide for us also. And so with the emergency response resource group, that basically draws on everyone from certain people on campus, depending on their specialty, what their specialty is. And does that mean the whole emergency response resource group will be called every time there's an event? Not necessarily. It might be two or three different members of the emergency response resource group, depending on the nature of the event. And the resource group, what our mission is to support the command post, the actual operations center, okay, whether it be police or fire, whoever's in charge of that incident, they're going to have their command post, and we're going to be supplying resources to that command post. The emergency response resource group will never be in charge of the incident, but we'll have the campus resources available to make sure people get fed, to make sure people have proper housing. We have to set up alternative housing, and all the logistic problems associated with the problems that could occur on campus. That's the objective of the resource group. That's pretty much everything I have. I think I've gone on long enough. Any more questions for me? Anything you...
Now, in situations like this, sometimes other students panic or are so distressed that they cause other people to ripple effects. It sounds like none of that happened, at least that's what we've learned from you and from the press, and that speaks to me that you guys did a pretty good job. The safety of the students seems to have been ensured. They seem to have been informed. Sure, I wish I had known more about it. Those things happened, but you did what you had to do, what was most important, and that is to make sure the kids were safe. You did an excellent job. Well,
I'd like to say, because everybody doesn't know this, that on Wednesday this past week, our student government actually awarded our university police a proclamation about what an excellent job that they did in supporting the students and how safe they felt throughout this whole incident, and that they felt that university police was looking out for their best interest. They framed this beautiful plaque and read it aloud and brought in our chief and a few other folks, and it was a really powerful moment, especially with everything going on nationwide with sessions with police and young people, and I think this was a really powerful moment, and so I certainly commend Alan. It's on behalf of the students, because that was their overall sentiment, was that they were really pleased with the way it was.
And they're very pleased with how we handled it, and it was a great honor for university police to be recognized by the student government.
And I should also mention that our student life staff did a magnificent job. The staff in the library, the staff in Cheney, the staff in the various academic buildings, right, and our counseling staff were all there. They stayed many extra hours. After the lockdown was lifted, I went down and with Lenore and with Courtney and with Greg and probably a couple of other people who...
Travis.
Who else was...
Travis.
Yes. Yes. And to each of the residence halls to make sure that the students, A, had gotten their food, were calm, were, you know, feeling secure and supported. And kind of the biggest issue that was raised was that one of the residence halls, they were only allowed to take one apple, okay, with the food. And I said, you go tell them the president said you can have as many as you like. Okay, and I swear that's what actually happened. And so, you know, so our students, I think, did feel well supported. At the open forum that we had, you know, there were a couple of students who expressed concern and that they had been scared and so forth, just as you'd expect. Okay, but I think the majority of the students really felt that the campus police had done a magnificent job and that we had acted in an appropriate way that tried to emphasize their safety at all points.
And I send my congratulations to campus police also. That sounds like a fantastic job and everybody associated with on-campus procedures. I think it was fantastic. And,
I wish I could have been here.
Yeah, you were in the hot tub, probably.
I had my cell phone with me,
though. He was getting training on how to handle these kinds of threats.
Well, thank you very much. If you have nothing else for me, I'll get out of your way.
Okay, thank you. I'll appreciate it. And maybe the minutes would show, I think, it's general agreement among the College Council members that we do appreciate the efforts that were made by everyone involved and commend them. Okay. We have an advisory board appointment. Karen Spellacy. I know this is going to be long, so.
I know. I think there's one of them. I'd like to appoint John Wetmore to the Electrical Engineering Technology Advisory Board for a 3-year reappointment.
Second.
Moved by Tim. Is there a second? Second by Tom. All in favor?
Aye.
Carried. Thank you very much. Anything else, Karen, right now? That's
no,
it?
Right now, no.
Okay. We have the minutes of the September 9th meeting. They were emailed to you. The chair will entertain a motion to approve those minutes. Moved by Joe. Second. Marie. Any additions or corrections? All in favor? Say aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much. Old business. Any old business? Anyone? Hearing none. Chair report. I do not have anything to report, I guess, other than I did attend the ACT annual meeting in Albany. It was sparsely attended. For obvious reasons, our new president was not able to attend. That was the weekend of the incident. That reminded me of something else. But I think the days of the ACT are waning. It's just, I don't see a purpose for it any longer, quite truthfully. That's just my opinion. But it's just not being very well attended. And that's all I have to say about that. Okay, moving on to the president's report.
Okay, and in the interests of time, I'm going to just give some bullets of some things that are going on. And any of the folks underneath me want to expand on any of these, they're, of course, welcome to do so. And, of course, if any of you have any questions, I'll be happy to go into them in more detail. In the academic areas, we're working to develop several new degree programs. As I think I mentioned, we were beginning to look at last time, mechatronics engineering, agricultural management, hospitality management, and a bit later on in some applied areas of computing. We're working to establish the state's College of Homeland Security on our campus as a joint effort with Clarkson. And this would involve participating in offering our first master's degree, if we're successful. We're trying to identify ways of getting a legislative earmark to rehabilitate Dana Hall as the home for this college, as well as for our current criminal justice and emergency planning programs. And that would be approximately $10 to $15 million as an effort. I've met with multiple departments and schools to see what their challenges and opportunities are. I've tried to do this in my first semester to meet with every one of them, and I think I'm pretty close. And so since we've met last, I've met with mathematics, criminal justice, nursing, science, business, engineering technology, physical therapy assistant in sports management and fitness, and I had meetings with the two schools that I haven't met with. Originally, I've met with Canino, and since then, I've met with Business Liberal Arts and with Science Health at CJ. And we've had a number of accreditation visits. One was for our dental hygiene program, and then also an ABET site visit for our two-year programs. Both of those visits went very well. I've given the welcome to the funeral services meeting. When they bring in the outside folks onto campus, they presented me with a death mask. And that was a little bit strange. Jill's going to get the strangest Christmas gift ever. And we've also had a meeting of the Alternative Renewable Energy Systems Advisory Board. And so one of the things that we really push for here as a mark of quality is accreditation. And so these are just examples of some of the accreditations of our programs at the highest levels. We've had an open forum with our faculty about the student comment form that's used for them to allow to make comments about the faculty and the courses that they're taking, and also at looking at the possibility of an advocate-based tenure procedure. And both of those were well received by your faculty assembly, who have asked me to continue work on those areas. And that open forum was sponsored both by my office and by our colleagues in the union. And I think it was well attended and it went very well. And I hope it's just the first of things that we'll do together with our union colleagues to show that we can work effectively together and that we're all in it together. We're going to be approaching Open SUNY with a proposal for us to offer a lot more of the core online, right, and for SUNY Canton to be a leader in this, in the SUNY system, possibly together with SUNY Empire State. And so this is it's very infancy right now, so you're among the very first to hear this. Okay. In the admissions area in student life, we've begun revamping our open houses, right? We've got a new director of admissions, and between her and myself and Molly and several other folks working on this, we're getting to change things to make them hopefully a little bit more engaging for the participants. And so we've added a faculty staff band that plays at the open house, and I play the guitar in that. Right? Lenore is the one who actually carries the weight. Singing and really playing well. And so, the deans are involved in the round robin portion, and we're moving to involve our faculty more, the departments more in this. Attendance has been very, very strong at the two open houses, and especially at the second one. Oh my goodness, the place was jammed. And the reactions from the parents and other observers have been very, very positive. We're working to bring in additional international students. I've met with the Greek Council, with student government, and with the SGA leadership, right, to be sure that we're hearing concerns from our students as well as suggestions. And many of the things that our students are bringing up are being acted upon, or in fact, we anticipate. And so that's very good. We've inaugurated a speaker series on campus to bring in industrial and community leaders. And so the first speaker has already come, and that was David Love, who was the plant manager from Corning Glass. And we were very pleased that while he was here, he also expressed some interest in potentially supporting the college. Okay, and so obviously that's one of the things we hope will happen when we do this. And we also hosted a very large career fair on campus, so large that they had to split it into two locations on campus, and that's obviously very good because we're all about preparing people for good jobs. In terms of policy issues, we've revised our emeritus policy to make it entirely administrative and in line with SUNY policy. There was some confusion about who needed to approve things and how. And so that's now been clarified, and we worked with our faculty assembly leadership to do this. And we've had two labor management meetings, and both, I think, were very collegial, and I think both went very well. In terms of alumni and foundation, I had the pleasure of attending both the Flaming Leaves alumni event in Lake Placid, and a week with our alumni in North Carolina. And I have to say, it's a real joy to hear our alumni talk about their experiences at senior camp. They all say the same exact thing about how ever far they've gone, and some of them have got doctorates, some of them are very high in major companies, but each and every one of them says their success began at SUNY Camp, and SUNY Camp was responsible for getting them to the point where they knew that they could do it. Okay, and I think that's a remarkable legacy. I wish I could take credit for it. Okay, but obviously my predecessors are the ones who get credit for this, and so it's been wonderful. We're looking at a couple of things with the foundation in terms of the possibility of a solar farm on our campus, the possibility of, a meat pack arrangement. And so these are kind of startup New York efforts.
What was the second example after this?
I'll go further into that.
Yeah, Lenore will talk about that. It's an agricultural thing. Okay, and we've had two namings on campus in the past semester. One is to name Joey's restaurant down in the Athletic Center, and that's the Renzi family. And the other is the naming of the Athletic Office Suite, and that's the Copley family. And I had the pleasure of being there for both of those. In terms of community outreach, we've had quite a bit of working together with the other campuses in the North Country. Our Town Gown Alliance has met. The Institute has met. The Institute is the group that works between Canton and Potsdam in terms of offering joint programs. Okay, and we just had a meeting of the joint leadership, okay, which is, again, Canton and Potsdam more broadly, working together on shared services and the like. Again, the relationships are very warm. I think I've got a very strong and positive relationship with President Esterberg over at Potsdam, and so she's a real pleasure to work with. And so I think our communities work very well together, and currently we're looking at the possibility of a joint bus service, right, to extend what we do, right, so that it would connect all four campuses as well as downtown Canton in downtown Potsdam in a more robust way. And so Potsdam has expressed interest in going into this with us, and we're going to be approaching the other two campuses as well as the county and the state to see about what kind of support can be got for this. On a personal note, in terms of community outreach, I was happy to be part of our Read Aloud program that our early childhood education program does, and I did a chemistry magic show for them, so that was a lot of fun. Okay, and two other things. One is that I attended yesterday and the day before, in fact, the Middle States accreditation meeting. They have meetings annually, and so I thought it would be a good idea for me to go to that, even though we're not actually up for reaffirmation for another 8 years. They've changed their criteria, so it's good to get an early note of that. But I had a chance to interact with some of my fellow SUNY presidents down there, and they're all very positive about working with SUNY Canton. In fact, yesterday at lunch, I had a very nice meeting with the president of Onondaga Community College and said, you know, we're not seeing as many students as we should from OCC coming up north, and we're going to work together on changing that. And we also had a meeting of the technology sector presidents, okay, so Morrisville and Delhi, so forth. And I got snowed out of that one, so I had to do it by phone. Okay, but that meeting went very well as well. And one of the things that I was interested to hear is that the SUNY system sees our sector as the innovative sector among the universities in terms of creation of programs that meet the community's needs and doing what SUNY should be doing. And so that was nice to hear. And finally, I just wanted to show you something that Molly Mott gave me today as part of our advertising effort. You know that nice slogan that's on the back of my business card that says SUNY Canton, great majors, great careers? Right, we're going to be giving these out at open houses and so forth. Right, just as kind of an advertising thing. I don't know if you know what this is. This is called a slap pen. So it's a pen, right, that if you slap it on your wrist.
Oh,
it becomes
geez.
A bracelet.
No kidding.
Right? And so
these are very cool.
Okay, and so I just thought
magic.
I don't like this. Yeah, isn't that great? I saw one of these at a technology conference last August in Boston, and I brought a couple back onto campus, and Molly saw this and said, we have to have this, right? And so now we're going to be giving these out. I thought you'd like that. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions or expand on anything, or you can wait for any of the others to expand on.
I also like the M&Ms that Dave Gerlach dispenses and say, soup kids. They taste
better.
Okay, well, seeing no questions at this point, I'll turn to Karen Spellacy to talk about academic affairs.
Well, you talked about most of it. But I'll fill in a few little things. Admissions at this point were up slightly in first-time, full-time applications. It's 1.7% higher than last year. So it's the right direction. But transfers are still down. Transfers are down from last year, but last year they were up from the year before. But my admissions director tells me transfers come in later in the spring semester when they start applying. So keeping our fingers crossed. We've been very, SUNY has this transfer mobility project where any bachelor degree has to, just about every bachelor's degree has to meet a SUNY transfer path, and any associate degree, AA degree or AS degree has to meet the transfer path. So we've been going through all our programs to make sure they meet all SUNY guidelines, and we're just about through that. Luckily, our AAS programs were left alone. We didn't have to change those. So. We are in the process of changing some names of some degrees. The electrical, mechanical, and civil four-year technology programs, now that they are ABET accredited, can now use the word engineering in their title. So those just went through faculty assembly, and as soon as we have EC cabinet approval, they'll go through SUNY and State Ed. We have also looked at changing some of our degrees from Bachelors of Technologies. Some will become BSs, Bachelor of Science, and some will go to the BBA. Whether which one of those where has a lot to do with how many liberal arts credits you put in it. A Bachelor of Arts, which we don't offer, has to have 90 liberal arts credits. A Bachelor of Science has to have 60. A BBA or a BTEC only has to have 30 liberal arts credits. So legal studies and fuel service administration, they are switching from a BTEC to a BBA. And mostly it's a marketing issue in terms of a lot of people don't know what a Bachelor of Technology is. It's not a degree you hear every day. People know what a Bachelor of Business Administration is. And so the ones that are administratively focused, maybe going for that. Some of the other ones are looking at becoming Bachelor of Science degrees. And some are going to keep the BTECs where they're working. But we thought that may help admissions if people don't have to explain that, yes, a Bachelor of Technology really is a four-year degree. So we're working on that. Other new programs that we are in various phases of discussion: game design, mechatronics, business analytics, hospitality, material science, a two-year legal studies program. There are a lot of ideas floating out there, and accounting is still floating out there, a four-year accounting degree, doing market research to see which ones are financially feasible.
Would any of the engineering studies, say, lead someone to start off here for a couple of years and go to Parks and
We already have that one. That is our engineering science degree. It's
okay.
A two-year associate's degree that matches up Clarkson very, very nicely, and it now matches up to the transfer paths of SUNY.
Oh,
so we got that one.
So our longer-range goal is to get them to be here for 4 years,
yes.
Get an engineering degree, and go to Clarkson for a master's degree.
Uh-huh. That sounds good.
Okay.
That's it.
Are you finished, Karen?
I'm finished, thanks.
Any questions for Karen? All right. Sean Miller, administrative update.
For you, other than to let you know that we did meet our target revenue projections, we actually exceeded them for the fall semester by about $400,000. Generally, we exceed by a little bit more than that, but I was happy that we did meet our targets. Residential or New York State full time part time is down a bit, but we made it up in out of state. There's a differential for out of state tuition, so we were able to make up the dollars on that piece. So I'm happy there. I'm watching closely for the 15-16 and sit on the enrollment management committee. We have many discussions where it's a weekly meeting to talk about going forward, and I watch closely for the impact to our budget. You know, hoping for that growth in enrollment for next year. Issues of concern as far as the budget is that New York State still is not funding any of our collective bargaining, so that becomes a problem that just grows each year. Same with our TAP gap. I'm looking at, as of December 1st, we've paid out the difference in the TAP, so as the tuition goes up and students that are 100% TAP eligible, we have to pick up the difference. So as of December 1st, we paid out $637,000 to make up that difference because of the tuition increases. I just came back from a business officer meeting in Albany, and there are conversations that some of the smaller campuses really, well, the governor's or the chancellor's office is trying to determine whether or not we lobby for continuing with assuming 2020. So the 2020 is the rational tuition increases. We're in the fourth year of a five-year cycle for that. We've been increasing our tuition $300 each year. So because it's the 2020, there is the thought that they should ask for the next 5 years because initially it was approved. Small campuses like us, and I know Oneana actually spoke up as well, when you talk about collective bargaining not being covered, and you talk about the TAP differential, the amount of revenue you actually generate, some of them actually go backwards. We generate a little bit of revenue from the tuition increase. You know, for campuses like us, it would be benefit us more to have the collective bargaining than to actually have a tuition increase at different schools. So there's some of those discussions are going on at the student level. Hopefully we'll have some input into that. And the only other thing is that the legislative member items still have not been released. So the money that we got from Patty Ritchie for Cheney and the nursing lab, apparently there's some discussions down there about how that was all came about, and they still haven't released the money. Cheney, we're still going through with our project and nursing, so we have our design, and we'll do it as a campus if they hold back on that, but we're hopeful that they will actually come forward with that. So those are some of the concerns as we go forward. You know, this year I think we're really safe. I'm very comfortable that we met our target revenue number, and so that's. Anybody have any questions for me in regard to that?
Okay, seeing none. Dave, about the dates.
Real briefly, the audit committee of the foundation reviewed its 990, which is our essentially our tax return, and no issues there. That's now been submitted. We've been traveling Virginia, Ohio, Texas, North Carolina, New Hampshire, California, New York, Pennsylvania. It was a pleasure to travel with the president. He was very warmly received, and I think we had one of the largest gatherings out of New York State in Raleigh. Wonderful, and working on some significant large gifts and keeping our fingers crossed, some nice-sized gifts. The president mentioned the solar project. The college has approached us to utilize the 155 acres that is adjacent to the campus that the College Association purchased in 1967 and 10 years ago donated to the foundation. They couldn't hold the land any longer, and for a number of reasons. Our phone-a-thon is complete. Our annual appeal is still drawing in funds, and that's exciting. Our After Canton, thank you to the PR office. Phenomenal, I think one of the best alumni magazines that has been produced, and you'll receive a copy of that. And today was an $85,000 day. It doesn't happen often, but between pledges and cash walk-ins, $85,000. So I'd really like it to be a $100,000 day. It's only
$15,000.
So
get out your wallets. Don't look at me.
We are on track with our fundraising. Last financials that I saw were a month ago, and we're on track to meet our goals for the year. And if any of these large gifts come in, we will certainly exceed our goals. And our staff is working diligently. Any questions or pledges?
So each question comes with a price.
Dave?
Yes.
Was that you over in Ogdensburg next to the red kettle with the blue kettle the other day?
It was a blue kettle, yes.
The blue kettle.
No, I would never want to compete against that organization. So.
Okay, Faculty Affairs, Liz?
We have our provost search underway right now. Hopefully by beginning of the spring semester, we'll be able to bring some candidates to campus for open forum presentation. We had our first discussion of the academic calendar at faculty assembly this past week. Academic calendar is now moved onto the governance side of campus under the Faculty Affairs Committee. So we look at potential for change in the academic calendar for next fall, but it was voted based on student input that they really enjoyed the current schedule we have this fall semester with the start date, the full week at Thanksgiving. So we're going to be keeping that schedule. And all of the campus governance leaders about a month ago received a request from SUNY Provost Cartwright to look at new SUNY metrics that could be used for additional state funding, if additional state funding became available, and the possibility for the presidential 360 review that the chancellor does of each SUNY president. So I met with Dr. Zafran and Karen, and we looked at the metrics. We decided which ones we would like to be measured on and which ones we would not like to be measured on. And then we put that out to the faculty staff for their feedback. Since then, we've had a few follow-up phone conversations with Provost Cartwright talking about exactly what the chancellor intends to do with these metrics. But it looks like they're going to be lumped together as sector measures, per se. At least we're seeking out additional state ones. It wouldn't be that Canton wanted this and Morrisville wanted something else. We think the tech sector should be reviewed on these categories and not the other ones. That was our most recent involvement with all of the faculty staff on campus.
Any questions for Liz? All right. Charles Fenner, Faculty Senate.
No, he's not here.
Oh, he's not here. That's right. Travis, Public Relations.
As Dave mentioned, my team and I have been working on After Canton. That's at the printers right now. It's a fantastic publication. Hopefully you'll get it in the next week or so. Be a nice little stocking stuffer for you. Some fun facts about Dr. Zafran and that. So, a few designations from organizations. We are a STEM jobs approved college. For 2015, that's our first STEM designation, so that's pretty exciting for us. We're also a military advanced education top school for 2015, making that list, so we enjoy that. And then yesterday, we were just named 50 most affordable public schools for out-of-state students by affordablecolleges.com, so we definitely take that as well. And if you happen to be out in Syracuse doing some holiday shopping, you just purchased a giant banner. We're in the main thoroughfare, so look out for that if you happen to be in Syracuse. That's all I have today.
We have a nice write-up in Northern New York Business, too.
Made the STEM designation? What?
STEM Jobs Magazine.
STEM
which is, I think, is a relatively new magazine that's just coming out.
Any questions for Travis? Courtney, Student Affairs.
Okay, so I'm the reason we have the big piece of information in your packet about the updated Title IX prevention and response packet. This is something that we will need to, before March, we will need to get your blessing on. At this point, it's an FYI, and I want to give you time to read through it, and I wanted to just give you the major highlights. Basically, this came down through the governor. Request that SUNY develop policies that address sexual assault on campuses. Obviously, SUNY was ahead of the game, and we had already done this, but because of this, we've tweaked them significantly. SUNY formed a working group that is composed of folks from across the 64 campuses, from all different levels, all different departments, who have gotten together and created this document that you have in front of you, which is updated policies. So the highlights are a few things, and most of which we have already, but we're going to need to update the language. We need to make sure that victims know how to receive confidential supportive resources both on and off the campus, which we do already, thankfully. We have to include a victim survivor's bill of rights, which is a new change, which we will update in our handbook. We also have to have a bystander policy that lets students know that, and faculty and staff, let them know that if they are a victim of sexual assault or sexual violence, that even if they're in violation of drug or alcohol policy on campus, that our primary concern is for their safety as far as the sexual violence is concerned, and we will not penalize them for the alcohol or drug violation. We do actually already have such a policy in place, but it doesn't specifically talk about Title IX and sexual violence, so we'll update that policy to reflect that change. We have to include making victims aware of the available remedies, such as change in course schedule, no contact orders, and adjudication, which we already have. We have to define consent, and they defined consent a little differently this time, so we're going to change that again. I know you all reviewed the, I think, 16-page document I gave you just before the start of the fall semester. They gave us that. They said, use this, please, and now they gave us this and said, use this instead. So we will continue to make the changes that SUNY requests. But the good news overall is that we are basically in compliance with this now, mostly with language change. The kicker is that the new regulation that goes in place for fall 2015 is that all new and incoming students have to be trained on Title IX and have to receive some sort of a training. So we're working toward possibly an online module that we'll be able to share with those students, in also incorporating an orientation. And the bigger feat is that all athletes, all students, leaders of any kind, including resident assistants, student government, student clubs and organizations, group life, all have to receive Title IX training prior to doing any function of their role or practicing on the field preseason. So this will impose a new challenge that we are moving forward with. The Title IX committee has already met, and we're ready to take it on. But these are some changes that are coming down. I wanted to give you a chance to review it, and I'm hoping at the next meeting it's something that we can move forward with your support on. If you have questions on that, I'd be glad to answer them now or at the coming meeting. A few other things, if there aren't any questions on that.
You have one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just curious, in terms of process, is this a typical top-down assuming process? They're going to give us a final document and say, please approve. They're just going to say, do this.
Essentially. This is the final document. This came from the SUNY working group.
That is the final document.
This is the final document.
There's no more change. I thought you said there are changes.
No, this is the change from the one that I had to approve back in the fall that we thought was going to be the final document.
Right.
Since then, what changed is that we had this whole document, everything was set. I did change the handbook to reflect that. And then the governor came out and said, no, I want to make sure that you're tackling sexual assault on campuses, and so I'm charging your board of trustees and chancellor Zimmer. So that's why we had these changes with Governor Cuomo's changes.
How? If you're going to ask us to approve it next meeting, let's talk about it this meeting.
Sure.
How does this new process, sexual assault is a crime. State of New York.
talking about on page 7, they talk about page 9, student conduct process. You know, throughout the conduct process, the accused and the victim will have the opportunity to have access to an advisor. I don't want an advisor if I'm in the middle of this. I want a lawyer.
You can't have a lawyer. They're using the word advisor in the broad sense of the word. The advisor can be an attorney. It can be any person you choose.
Well, it doesn't say that in it, and I think that's misleading.
Our policy actually does state it in the definition of the support. We call it support person. It actually specifies this person may be an attorney, it may be a parent, maybe a family member, a faculty member on the campus, but it can be anyone you're choosing. We actually drill down and specifically give the examples. But I'm not sure that's good enough.
I mean, this has potentially long-lasting, life-changing impacts on both parties, and we're saying you can have your brother-in-law stand up as your advisor. That's ridiculous.
Well, this stands out from the previous one also, but it goes, it makes sure that the accused and the victim both have the same rights. Initially, it was veering off to where it appeared that maybe the victim was getting treated differently than the suspect, so to speak,
yes,
or the offender. And now this makes sure that both parties are the same rights throughout the hearing process.
I do completely understand what you say, though. You know, I understand exactly what you're saying. This is actually a discussion we've had at the student level and all the way down. Is the concerns that if you read, Higher Ed Chronicle and other areas, this is something that's very hotly debated at this point. You know, whether this is the right approach, and that this is the approach they're taking nationwide. You know, this is what college campuses do, but there's a lot of argument about whether that's the right approach.
But the distinction is if they choose this to take this as an administrative approach as opposed to a criminal.
And they can have both. They can choose in the Title IX rights that they have, they can choose to do both. They can say, I want to take this criminally, and I also want to go through campus judicial. And the perk of campus judicial is that it's generally quicker than the criminal process. That said, I understand the due process rights.
But that said, that I think the case at Jefferson Community College this fall is something that we need to pay close attention to that, because the accuser said, let's go, based on the advice she got from the college, said, let's go the administrative route. The young man that was accused was kicked off the basketball team, was limited in his activities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 2 months later, it gets turned over to the police, and after a brief investigation, they said, there's no case here. Now they didn't say why.
Right.
Was it because it had been too long and there was no evidence to be able to act upon, or was it because there was no case to begin with? But the fact of the matter is, that young man had been, he now has a SUNY record. I think this is to have it one way or the other. Like I said, what my starting premise was, sexual assault is a crime. To me, that says you do one thing, you go to the police.
Right.
That's what we have a judicial system for.
I agree. And we never talk anybody into or out of anything. This is solely, we have to provide the options. We don't, believe me.
Yeah, I understand.
We
prefer to
go to the police.
That's why I also said this is,
SUNY's
written this and we're just going to say
because we have no choice.
In fact, it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this is also coming out of political initiatives. Senator Gillibrand has got a bill that's related to this. Governor Cuomo has a whole policy that is now compelling SUNY to generate its own policies. Governor Cuomo's policies are very similar to policies that were recently enacted in the state of California, and the yes means yes sort of model being adopted. President Obama has got the It's On Us campaign, all of which are related to this. And while we may want to argue that since it's a crime, it should always go through police procedures. It's also very clear at both the federal and the state level that the victim has the right to choose not to go that way and to go through other means of adjudication or no means of adjudication if that's what they choose. And that makes this a very messy and complicated business.
I have a question along the same lines as Tom, and I never really understood, like, a crime or alleged crime committed on a college campus is treated far different. If that same crime happens down in Riverside Drive, alleged rape, the police are notified and they're arrested. It's simple. And I could never understand why a college campus, it seems to be different. You have choices. If an alleged rape occurs on Riverside Drive, the victim doesn't have a choice to go an administrative route, right?
Well, there is no secondary route, but they do have the choice of not pursuing it with the police. And so I think the real analogy here is in both cases, on campus and off campus, right, the victim has got the right to, you know, bring the police in, have a full investigation, charge the individual if they can sustain it, and so forth. Okay, or not to do that. Okay, that's true on the campus as well. Okay, but since the campus is an independent entity that has its own judicial processes, right, then people on the campus can avail themselves of campus judicial processes. Okay, and so that's the complicating factor. Obviously, somebody in town can't use a campus judicial process because they're not on the campus.
But that is really apples and oranges. They're completely different. The judicial process on campus is related to your ability to be part of the education community on campus. The judicial process that happens in downtown Canton may send someone to state prison for 5 years. Those are the worst that's going to happen here is you get kicked off. You have to go back home. I mean that, and I guess that is what I find so just incredible about this: that someone that we're actually considering, the state is actually telling us to consider a policy that would allow a sexual offender to just be simply dismissed from college. And we have that sexual offender wandering around the community because the victim said, I don't want to press this in court. Okay, so the judicial system here says you can't be here anymore. That is not, I don't think that's justice served for either party. And I think it's a danger to the community.
It protects the victim more. That's the premise.
But I don't think it does. The person's still on the street.
I don't disagree with you, but the premise is that it protects the victim.
I would think that if a student chooses just to do an administrative degree, it's in hopes that there will be more confidentiality.
Yes.
That's it.
It's a huge piece.
I agree with you 100%. But because that other person is there, maybe a perpetrated crime again.
Yeah, they're exactly. Usually very, honestly, in my experience, and we haven't dealt with a lot of sexual violence, mostly it's been sexual harassment when we've dealt with Title IX. Generally speaking, it's the fear of having to go to a court hearing, have to confront their accuser. And they do in the judicial process as well. I mean, there is also the right for both parties to hear everything that's going on, so it doesn't change the process, but it certainly isn't a safety issue.
Melissa? And this kind of goes off of what part, Ian, you guys were just saying. Some students, like, I don't know how much any of you guys have had to deal with somebody that has been sexually assaulted or sexually harassed. But most of the time, their mindset is they just want it to go away. They don't want to have to see this person every day when they go to this class. They don't want to have to see it. A lot of victims, and this goes for, I guess, with the law too, they don't want to report it. Because in the mindset, they believe it's their fault somehow, some way. So they don't like to report it. And that goes for, like, the law and not just on campuses. But also, like, there's more pressure with campuses because you're like, word gets out. Like, this person got kicked out. And once he gets kicked out, you know, he's like, or he or she, the person that offended, you know, they're usually upset that they got kicked out. And they say it's over law that happened at some party or something like that. Whereas a victim on, like, campus, maybe they just don't want to have to see them. they may not want to have to go through facing criminal charges, this or that. You know, they blame themselves. Like, maybe I just shouldn't have drank that much at the party. Granted, yes, you, somebody's intoxicated, yes, it's straight up rape, but maybe the, you know, it was my own fault for like drinking so much, that's why, blah, blah, blah. They blame themselves. They don't want a full, I want this person to go to jail. They just don't want to have to see that person or deal with that person. And, like, I can personally attest to, like, stuff like that because I've sat through that process with someone. Somebody asked me to be, like, their, like, support person to go over that process. And it's not about, hey, I want to send this person to jail or whatever. It's like, you know, I did something stupid at a party or whatever. I shouldn't have done that. But at the same time, I don't want to have to see and face this every day on campus.
All of these things, I think, are a function of trying to support the victim and give them additional options. Originally, the way the law worked was it went to the police, they prosecuted or didn't based on the evidence and the degree of cooperation of the victim, and that was the entire range of option that the victim had. Okay, now there's an additional route, okay, that's available, and for the reasons that you just heard Melissa say and Courtney say, sometimes the victim finds that to be a better route. The important part, I think, in supplying that alternative pathway is to ensure, and that's what the SUNY rules are trying to do, that it's fair to both the victim and the accused alike. Because, obviously, the worst result would be moving to a campus-based set of policies that was stacked in one direction. Okay, and so part of what the SUNY policies are trying to do is to provide that alternate pathway, but to ensure that it's fair to both parties.
I don't want to prolong this, but I agree with what you say, Melissa. And certainly the victim, so many incidents go unreported, and it makes it easier for those to be reported. But it's still something in my mind. I can't understand why, just because it occurs on this campus, that they have that second option. And to follow up on Tom's question, if, in fact, there was a rape alleged and the administrator dealt with and the kid was kicked out of SUNY Canton and goes on and commits another crime, there's going to be a lawyer somewhere that's going to come back and talk to SUNY Canton.
Right. A couple other questions. How does this affect the Clery report? If an allegation is adjudicated administratively, that's not a criminal case, so does it not get reported as a criminal case for the campus?
It wouldn't get reported as a case for the campus. We wouldn't know the names necessarily if it went through the judicial system, nor would we care. But if there's a rape reported on campus, that gets reported on the Clery.
Whether it goes the judicial system or the administrative.
Correct.
Based on whether it qualifies as a crime, whether or not it was prosecuted.
A lot of this also is driven by Title IX, which is another hour block of instruction. But Title IX requires us to reach out to sexual assault and sexual harassment on campus, both employees and students, not only on campus, but if it was that person that got raped on Riverside Drive who was a student of ours, that's a major concern for us. We've got to make sure that person's getting the resources they need to get their the education they deserve.
Or if the person or if the accused is our student,
correct.
It's our problem. Even if the person was a
well, and I that leads right into the last question I have. Your officers, chief, if they are asked if there's an incident that's going the administrative route, but there needs to be additional evidence gathered, is it your officers doing any investigation? And if they're involved in the investigation and have actual knowledge, or have not actual knowledge, but have strong evidence of a crime, but it's not going the criminal.
Be careful though, because the campus proceeding is not based on whether it's a crime or not. It's based on whether it's a violation.
I understand that, but my question was if university police are involved in any evidence gathering to support the
If they do want police involvement, yes, but not if they don't want police involvement.
They can come to us and say, I want to report a rape, and we go through, we interview them, we take take copious notes.
That's a bill of police.
Well, but we can do that. They can say, okay, I just want to report this, but I don't want police involvement.
Right.
At that point, we're no longer involved when we ship them over to the judicial system and the Title IX people also.
It's a very
complicated. It's not easy. And
as a sworn officer, how do you feel about that?
It doesn't matter how you feel about that. But I mean, you also have to understand, too, under Title IX, although there's confidentiality, if we have a student come to us that says, I was sexually assaulted by XYZ, right? And we've got three other cases, or one or two other cases, where XYZ has been reported sexually assault someone, then the school may say, well, we can't keep this confidential. We'll try and keep it personal, but we've got to do an investigation because we can't allow this person to continue the sexual assault.
Can I just say, Chief Mulkin is officially SUNY trained because 2 years ago, he would have given us your opinion.
Thank you, Courtney.
Sure.
Thank you, Chief.
And I would be glad at the next meeting when we go for a vote on this to take more questions when we've had more time to review the material. I know it's a lot to digest, and I appreciate the comments and questions. A couple quick things. I know we're running out of time, but on the student affairs side, I did want to let you know on 12-16, our men's basketball team is playing at the Barclays Center in New York City, which is very exciting. It's a great opportunity. We're busing not only the basketball players, but a group of students, alumni, faculty, and staff who are going, so it's a very exciting opportunity for us to play. Barclays Center is in December 16th, so right
I'll
after we close for the semester, so next 2 weeks from Tuesday. And also, we start this spring semester and going into the summer with a renovation project of Heritage Hall East Wing, and that renovation project will take that wing offline, and we will completely renovate the bathrooms and rooms there, and we are going to do one wing per spring semester until all of the wings of the four traditional halls are done. So those are the major updates. I have lots of other little things, but I'm sure I've taken enough time. So thank you.
Our motto is a wing each spring till we've done the whole thing. Melissa, student government.
I don't really have much to report on. We're mostly just focused on getting the students more involved, so it's not just coming to get an education. They can, you know, build relationships, connections. We're also working a lot on school pride so that students, when they leave the college, like, they come back and they still think fondly of the college, and trying to work on getting, like, the negative energy that's out in the community, like, kind of dealing with that. Some major things that we're trying to do and push for is, like, get all the clubs to have, like, banners, kind of like what Potsdam does, so that way, you know, when we have, like, open houses and stuff like that, students who say, hey, you know, I could join this, I can make friends. It's not where they have to just want to get out, get here, and then just leave and not feel fondly of the college. Another big thing that we did is we sponsored a commuter stress-free luncheon where it was held in, like, the commuter's lounge, but it really allowed our student government to have one-on-one FaceTime with the commuters because they are our biggest chunk and also our hardest chunk to kind of connect with because the hectic of non-traditional families and just commuting in general. So we got a lot of positive feedback from them and, like, some things that we want to work with to connect with them and get them more involved. We finally have a new secretary. I don't know how many of you have really heard anything on that, but this semester's been a bit of a challenge because we lost our secretary very midway in the semester, so it's been a process to get a new secretary and hopefully get more clubs and stuff on track with that. The only real big, like, concerns the students had was, like, obviously with the Yik Yak situation, which has already been handled and talked about, and some minor, like, registrar issues of, but when we do our monthly luncheons with the president, like, he already stated, usually you guys have already had made plans to fix something or whatever that we brought up, and it's very much a very open topic when it comes to discussing it with the president and the options that we have to try and solve problems. That's all I really have.
questions for Melissa?
Just have a comment. Two Saturdays ago, American University women, at the direction of Dr. Lynn Fox from St. Lawrence, provided a leadership training session for young women, and 25 young ladies from each of the four colleges were selected as potential leaders, and we met for an all-day conference and had lunch, and there were 25 young women from Canton. They represented the school very well. I was very proud to be part of it. I think it's something that will continue. And some of the leaders that were asked to be part of this in the round tables where we were surrounded by young women have agreed to be mentors for some of these people. So I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. Hopefully it will blossom and do some good. And Melissa was there. Mm-hmm. Nice to see her.
And this was something that was also partially sponsored by the Four College Consortium.
Yes, Four College Consortium, NAA.
Okay, University Relations, Lenore.
Just a couple of things. For Startup New York, we have submitted our first sponsor application. It's a small company that will be moving in on campus to a couple of empty offices. And we're really excited. We're hoping it'll be approved and that it'll be able to start operations by the beginning of the year. So that's exciting. We also submitted an amendment to our campus plan, which y'all received 30-day notice on. So we submitted that that amended campus plan today. In terms of government relations, as Dr. Zafran noted, we've had some really positive responses from our legislators, both local, state, federal, on the various degree programs that we have planned, and also the College of Homeland Security. They've been very helpful, lending their support, getting in touch with contacts on our behalf, or putting us in touch with contacts. So that's been really, really positive. On another note, Congressman Owens has agreed to be our commencement speaker this May. So I think that'll be a really wonderful thing for our campus. And he was very excited to have been asked. So we look forward to an ongoing relationship with him, and we look forward to a good relationship with our incoming congresswoman as well. Oh, right. The other side of New York thing.
Could you be more specific about what company, or who would you rather not, about what company has been chosen to be their first?
Yes, assuming it's approved by Empire State Development, it's Adirondack Operations. They'll be working on IT solutions for construction management projects to make them more efficient. So they'll be working with our construction management degree, our business degrees. We'll be taking interns each semester. They'll be involved in giving guest lectures in those various programs and also being part of our entrepreneurship efforts on campus. They have run a very successful business. It's a woman-owned business as well. So it's a great company. Another company that's very interested in Startup New York and is looking at foundation land is an offshoot of United Helpers, actually. You may have read in the papers that they are looking to start a food hub and meat processing firm, and they're looking at Startup New York as an option for that and partnering with us. That will help us towards our ag business that we're looking towards taking, so they can be very instrumental in helping us decide where we want to go with this program, what kind of training we want to provide, and could be a really great boon for local agriculture and a great source of local jobs as well. So Dave and I will be meeting with Steve Knight at the beginning of the year, and those discussions will be ongoing.
And I should have mentioned the Renzi family, who I mentioned earlier in terms of the naming on campus of Joey's Restaurant, is very interested in our agricultural management potential program and have offered to assist with it as well. And definitely want to be involved. UUP, Dave.
I'll be very brief. We've been very active this semester, and we've had an executive board meeting every month. We've had a labor management meeting. We've had a continuing our 2% raise this year that you mentioned was offset by the 2% deficit reduction that our Governor Cuomo put back. That has to be paid back in 2016, which is going to be a 5% percent cost.
Yeah, I think our total over the 3 years for the full campus, and of course they did it for MCs, they did it for UCSBA, payback to
because they're not going to pay. I mean, it's a funny way of
right.
showing a saving on labor.
Right.
My last two more items. We're holding chapter elections again next spring for the union leadership. And also, I just heard that March 10, 2015, statewide UUP. Is going to have an outreach effort called Tech Sector Day in the LOB, the Legislative Office Building in Albany, and I will leave the Administrative Development Department campus to be involved.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, any questions for Dave? With that, then, that concludes the President's report.
Yes, V, I have one additional comment to make. Charles Fenner. I was able to attend a meeting in Watertown where Charles Fenner and another representative met with Guilfoyle Ambulance that is having some tough economic times right now, as well as establishing a business plan, long and short-term goals. And I want to let you know that he did an excellent job and put everybody on the right track, and that process of helping them is continuing. And Guilfoyle Ambulance Management is very appreciative of what is being done for them by SUNY Camp.
I believe I've heard that as well from other sources, so it's good to hear that confirmed.
Thank you.
And that concludes our report.
Great, thank you. Thank you, everyone. The council plans to move into executive session, and we'll be doing so under the open government law, section F has to deal, I think, with medical and financial and employment and credit, a whole bunch of stuff. But that's the section anyway. And so I'll excuse everyone except the college council members and the president. If you care to come back after we go out of executive session, you are welcome to do so, but I assure you, you will only witness adjournment. Thank you very much.